next year. Tonight we're from our usual Hilchos, and we will talk about Hilchos Chanukah. Specifically those Hilchos Chanukah that are very applicable in apartment buildings, in Washington Heights, and the kinds of lives that we live. And hopefully we'll touch on some things that we did touch on last year. We have some adjustments to things we mentioned last year, those who were here a year ago. And even if you weren't here a year ago, we still have lots of new stuff. So hopefully there'll be something for everybody, or a few things for everybody. First of all, it's good to talk about this tonight, because sometimes my Chanukah shiur is on Chanukah, but today I get to speak about Chanukah the night. Chanukah is tomorrow night, right? Mm-hmm. Just making sure. So there's something that we could do tomorrow that will be helpful, that it only helps if you get it. I mean, it helps more if you get it before Chanukah. And that is something that we've spoken about in the past. But the halacha is, recording the Shulchan Aruch, that, let's back up. There's something called muktzah. Muktzah means, what does the word muktzah mean? Set aside, designated. So usually things that we talk about on Shabbos that are muktzah are set aside for non-Shabbos use. I'm not allowed to use them on Shabbos. That's kind of muktzah. That's huktzah l'mitzvaso. For example, the apple hanging from your sukkah on sukkahs is muktzah. Even on Chol HaMoed, when there is no Hilchos Muktzah. Why? Because it's a different kind of Muktzah. Meaning, there's a halacha that states that something that is designated for mitzvah use, you're not allowed to consume it for non-mitzvah use. So if you have a delicious apple, or a pomegranate, or some other pretty fruit that's hanging, you are not allowed to take it down, you're not allowed to touch it on Yontif, but even on Chol HaMoed, when it might be able to be touched, you're not allowed to consume it, or take a bite out of it. Similarly, if you would have an esrog, and you want to make esrog jelly, you can't do that on Sukkot. Because even if you're going to be yotzei the mitzvah with a different esrog, since the esrog that you purchased, or that your father purchased, or that your brother purchased, or whoever purchased, was purchased for a mitzvah, it is designated, as muktzah, huktzah, designated, specified, set apart for mitzvah use, and it is a bizayon, it's a disgrace, to consume it. And therefore there will be an issur d'rabbanan called huktzah mitzvaso, to consume an esrog on Sukkot. After Sukkot is over, that's fine. Similarly, it's also to consume the pomegranate that's designated for the mitzvah of decorating a sukkah. And similarly, there are those shittos that hold that when it comes to Chanukah candles, let's say I have a candle. Hello? One second. Pause for technical difficulties. Maybe it just needs another battery. Okay, let's say I have a candle that I use for my Chanukah candles. Now, what's my intention? My intention is that this should burn for my Chanukah candles. What actually happens, for whatever reason, either it's windy, or my dog blew it out, or my three-year-old daughter blew it out, or whatever else might have happened, the candle gets blown out. So here we get into a wonderful discussion as follows. Is this candle, or the oil, for the same price, is the candle or the oil that I lit for Chanukah set aside for mitzvah purpose, such that it's also to derive benefit, it's also to consume it for my own benefit? Based on this, the Shulchan Aruch, Hilchos Chanukah writes, that when you have oil left over after Chanukah, you have to destroy it. You can't use it for your salad, right? You put olive oil on your salad, right? You can't use this for your salad. You can't use it for your own benefit. You can't use it to light, I don't know, Shabbos candles or the like. You have to destroy it. Why? Because it was designated for the mitzvah purpose and therefore cannot be used for any other consumption. Now, let's just qualify this point. The Poskim write that when you light a large candle, let's talk about oil, it makes it easier. When you pour oil, a little bit of oil goes a long way. So if you pour one of those shot glasses of oil, that could last you for 3 hours. So if it gets blown out after 2 hours and there's still some oil left, that was not designated for the mitzvah, because the mitzvah was really the first half hour of the lighting. And therefore, the extra stuff that would burn after the first half hour, like the next 2.5 hours of oil,
that's not really set aside for mitzvah, because the mitzvah is primarily just the first half hour. So if your candle blew out, which happens all the time with oil menorahs, after an hour and a half, after 30 minutes, that whatever oil is still left was not set aside for mitzvah, because the mitzvah is just the first 30 minutes. However, what happens if for some reason, some unforeseen reason, your candle blew out within the first 30 minutes? So the rest of the remainder of that oil was set aside for mitzvah purpose, and therefore will become asur behana'a, will not be able to be used to be consumed, and therefore is supposed to be destroyed or burnt after Hanukkah. So, for that reason, Mishnah Berurah suggests that many achronim urge us, right now or tomorrow, to make a tanai, to make a stipulation that we only want to designate as mitzvah oil the oil that we're actually going to burn. But whatever oil ends up burning, or whatever oil is going to be just for that first half hour, if it's for, let's say I pour in 3 hours of oil. I mentioned before that really that's not going to get, that's not the mitzvah oil, just the first half hour is the mitzvah oil. But since there are some poskim who hold that whatever I pour into my menorah is mitzvah oil, the poskim suggest that I should make a tanai, make a stipulation before Hanukkah, that whatever oil I'm about to pour that's not going to be used for the mitzvah, or that's for, going to be the extra oil for after the main mitzvah purpose, the main 30 minutes, whatever extra oil that's going to be left over, I do not have in mind to designate it and to separate it for mitzvah purpose. If it ends up burning, great, it was for the mitzvah. Whatever ends up getting left over and not burnt, I have in mind that I hereby do not designate it as mitzvah oil. This way, I will not have any leftover oil that is muktzah for the mitzvah. Any questions on this point?
Even if it does burn within half an hour, it can just burn until the rest of the half hour, though, where the rest of it would be considered to be mitzvah.
I don't understand what you said. If something went out within 15 minutes, so what do you suggest?
So light it for another 15 minutes.
There's no chiyuv to light. If something goes out within the first half hour, this is a gigantic machlokas, we paskin that if it went out kavsa ein zakukla, we're not obligated to relight it. If a person chooses to relight, the poskim say within the first half hour, you should relight it. It's nice to, it's appropriate to, but it's not you're not obligated to. Because kavsa, we hold, if it goes out, kavsa, the chabot, to extinguish, ein zakuk. You're not required to deal with it. Zakuk is Aramaic for like dealing with, it's Hebrew, for dealing with it. So you're not obligated to deal with it, you don't have to relight it. If it happens to go out, you could leave it, but the post can also suggest you do relight it. If you did relight it, well, so there's no oil left. I'm talking about a case where there is oil after you.
Wait, but I'm saying like if you destroy that half hour worth of oil, then the rest of it is not considered mitzvah oil. If you didn't make that tonight, let's say.
I'm not following.
If you didn't make the tonight, that whatever is not used as mitzvah oil.
So then the rest of the oil for that part of the amount, for the amount of time will be mitzvah oil, and will have to be discarded in a bonfire after Hanukkah. Certainly the half hour. The rest of the oil is machlokas, I suppose.
That's what I'm saying. So let's say, forget the rest of it for a second, but that half hour worth of oil that didn't burn for half an hour, can you just make it burn now for half an hour and then throw out the rest of the oil?
I believe so, yeah. No, I think it's sufficient if you make the tanai once before Hanukkah begins. That would be ideal. That whatever oil, this is what you should do. Tomorrow afternoon, but tomorrow evening, before you light candles, say whatever oil is not going to end up being consumed by the flames of the Hanukkah candles, I hereby declare that it is not designated for the mitzvah.
Okay, and is that also specifically only for the oil that's like in the cups, or is it for the entire
body? Excellent question. The only question of ever having oil designated for mitzvah purposes is the stuff you actually pour into the cups. If you happen to go to Kifut and buy a 16-ounce or a 1-liter container of olive oil, just because you bought it for Hanukkah olive oil because you like your salad with whatever, some other kind of Italian brand name olive oil, just because you bought it in Kifut for Hanukkah, it doesn't make it designated for the mitzvah. It's only whatever you poured into the cups that we have to discuss. Okay? Let's go on to another point. Many of you live in apartments and that have more than one bedroom. Let's say you have a 3-bedroom apartment, a 2-bedroom apartment, and you live in one bedroom, and your roommate lives in a different bedroom. Based on the apartment location that you have and which street you're over, sometimes your roommate has more of a Pirsum Manisa window than you. Let me give you an example. Let's say you're on the corner of Bennett and 187th, or 186th. And for argument's sake, you have a corner apartment, and one bedroom, if it's the living room that's over Bennett, so great, both of you will lie in the living room. But let's say the living room is back in the back of the building to the courtyard, and you have a bedroom that's right over 186th, and your roommate has a bedroom right over Bennett. Let's assume, just for argument's sake, that Bennett has more Pirsum Manisa. So is it better for you, who has the apartment in the less Pirsum Manisa, the room in the apartment in the less Pirsum Manisa location, should you lie in your roommate's room? Or should you lie in your own room with less Pirsum Manisa? So this question was asked to Shlomo Zalman Orbach as far as dormitory rooms. And he wasn't talking about a dormitory, he was talking about yeshiva boys in a dira, and that has a number of bedrooms. And there, in the same halach would apply equally to us, a person should not light in his friend's room just because his friend has more Pirsum Manisa. If you have your room, then light in your room if there's sufficient Pirsum Manisa. If there's not, light in the living room. But you shouldn't write in your friend's room because there's more Pirsum Manisa. If you have whatever crazy situation that there's no Pirsum Manisa in your room and no Pirsum Manisa in the living room, which is hard to imagine, but if it does happen, then you could talk to me, we could see what other options there might be. But in general, you're not supposed to use Pirsum Manisa of your roommate's bedroom. That being said, if there are numerous rooms in your apartment, there's a kitchen, there's a living room, there's your bedroom, there's a dining room perhaps, so choose whatever room will have the most Pirsum Manisa. That being said, in my house I don't do that, because in my house I have little children running around. And therefore, the room that has most Pirsum Manisa is the living room. Those of you who know my house, you sort of walk in a dining room and there's a living room with windows. If we would light right near the windows, that's right where my kids play with their Lego and they jump on the couch. And if we had candles right behind there, I'm worried that they would be jumped on, etc. That would be a sakana, so I don't light there. I light in a not-so-great Pirsum Manisa location, which is the back window of my kitchen, which doesn't go on to 186th Street, where in my building would have more Pirsum Manisa. It goes more to the back, to Laurel Hill Terrace, which there are not so many people. But for safety, I put it there, even though there's not as much Pirsum Manisa. But if I had my choice, let me rephrase that. If I didn't have little kids running around, then we would light wherever there's most Pirsum Manisa. Yes, question. Somebody had a question over there? No? Yeah. I don't understand. Tell me the case.
As in, like, does it have to be at a window?
We'll talk about Pirsum Manisa just for the inside of the house a little bit later. For now, we're talking about at windows, but we'll talk about inside the house maybe a little bit later. If we get a chance, maybe not. We'll see. What I'd like to talk about now is different kinds of scenarios that you might wonder about in terms of when to light candles. And we'll talk about first some introduction, and then we'll talk about very specific cases in terms of going to weddings. You asked me a shayla similar to this, talked about going to weddings, going to friends' houses, going away. And we'll talk about time right now. So when is the zman to light Hanukkah candles? So here we have some very gigantic machlokuses. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shemakom Yehudah Baruch. Where the Rambam says some very strong words. The Rambam says that you have to light at Shkia, and if you didn't light in the first half hour after Shkia, forget about lighting Hanukkah candles. No point. Try again tomorrow night. That's the Rambam's opinion, which is very strong, and therefore makes us think about the importance of lighting on time if we're able to. And because of that Rambam's opinion, I strongly urge you, if you're at work and there's nothing you could do, okay, you'll light when you get home, of course. But if it's a Sunday, if there's a day that you're off from work this week, there might be some days that you're off from work, you should arrange your schedule such that you could get home in time to light your Hanukkah candles. If for some godforsaken reason your parents or grandparents or uncles or aunts actually ask you, what time do you want to have the Hanukkah party on Sunday afternoon? Don't just say, whenever it works best for you. I mean, you could say that also. But say, such that I could get home in time to light Hanukkah candles, bizman. Because the Rambam's opinion is that if you don't light within that first half hour after Shkia, which this week is about 4:30-ish, give or take, then according to the Rambam, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah. Okay, there are other shitas that we do paskin like, that allow you to light later, like we all do most nights of Chanukah. But if you have the opportunity on any given night of Chanukah to light really bizman, then you should and make every effort to do so. I'm not telling you to leave work early, but if you do get home, it's a Sunday, you have it in your own, you know, if your parents don't ask you and there's the Hanukkah party and you don't get home till 8 o'clock, there's nothing you could do. But if they ask you, then do your hishtadlus to light bizman. What is this man? So here you have a gigantic machlokas, we're not going to go into the details. I would urge you, some people light either at Shkia, some people light 20 minutes after Shkia, half hour after Shkia, at around Seis, HaKochavim, 35 minutes after Shkia, around that time. There are different shitas, and therefore I'm not going to say do exactly this, do exactly that. But if you want to be safe, you could light 20 minutes after Shkia, and that will be a very safe time. Again, on that Sunday that you're home, or any other days of vacation that you have this week, try to light around Shkia, or within a half hour after Shkia, around Shkia or Tseis HaKochavim, which is, let's say, 4:30, 4:50, 5 o'clock, 10 after 5, that time period would be ideal. Now, what happens if a person didn't light at that time? Then we're all familiar with what we do all the time, that we light later until Ad Shetichel Regel Min Hashuk, which is, well, it used to be half hour, that's where the Rambam got half hour after Shkia, but nowadays, of course, Tichel Regel Min Hashuk depends on where you live. So if you live in Muncie, or you live in a small side street in the Five Towns somewhere, or in some other suburb area where there are not so many people on that street after 9 p.m. or 9:30 p.m. So Tichel Regel Min Hashuk means if you're alone in your house and there are not other family members, in terms of the population on the street, you should be lighting until 9:30. After that, you cannot say a bracha on lighting candles. After, let's say, you live in Muncie or some small street in the Five Towns or some other suburb, you cannot light after 9:30 with a bracha. However, in Washington Heights, we have the great fortune, along with the price that we pay for it, besides financial, in terms of cockroaches and in terms of other elements of the neighborhood and other in terms of the free music that we get during the summer. So along with that, we also have the benefits of a very, 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 very late Tichel Regel Min Hashuk. I live on the YU side. Hanukkah is around finals time. Without question, 1 a.m. is certainly not Tichel Regel Min Hashuk. I assume on Bennett, that's probably relatively safe. Certainly midnight, probably even 1 o'clock. I'd assume at 1 a.m. there are more people walking down Bennett than there are in any 8-hour period in a small street in Muncie from, let's say, 9 p.m. till 5 the next morning. So therefore, Tichel Regel Min Hashuk allows us the opportunity to light with a bracha when we come home from a wedding. Let's say you're going to a wedding, or you're going to some other party, or you have a date, and you're not coming home till 11 o'clock at night, 11:30 at night, 12 o'clock at night. Don't worry, you could still come home and make a bracha when you light at 12 o'clock at night, because there are still people walking down the street, down Bennett Avenue, 186, 187th Street, Overlook, probably Wadsworth as well. And you won't have any problem of Pirsum Anisa, even though it is so late at night, which in the time of, you know, before they had lampposts, before they had, you know, street lamps in cities, that was obviously never the case. So thank God for living in Washington Heights. Along with the kula that we're giving, keep in mind it brings itself a chumra. If we assume that Tichel Regel Min Hashuk is much later than it used to be, so maybe Not only do I have the opportunity to light my Hanukkah candles later at night, well, Tichel Regel Min Hashuk is for two things. It's A, until when can you light? What else does Tichel Regel Min Hashuk tell me?
It has to burn until that time.
The fire should be illuminating, the fire should be lit for that amount of time, for that half hour from Shkia till Tichel Regel Min Hashuk. If we said nowadays Tichel Regel Min Hashuk is at midnight, 1 a.m., so one can argue that, just like I have the leniency to light until 12 o'clock if I got home really late, maybe this should bring with it a chumrah that I should have enough shemen in my oil, in my menorah, to last until Techol Regem HaShok, which is midnight, which is going to end up being a chumrah. So I urge you, if you could put some extra oil in, let it burn, instead of doing exactly half an hour, just put some oil in and let it burn for a few hours, and it's hard to, we're not well-versed enough in our oils to know how long the oils last. But if you see it lasts for a few hours and you're up late anyway, it's nice to have Hanukkah candles burning in your house anyway. After talking about Techol Regem HaShok, everything we just discussed was assuming that we're lighting for the people in the street, and we have to figure out how late the people are in the street. Comes the Ramah in Hilchos Chanukah, Tuf Resh Ayin Beis, and says that was all in the time when the Iker Hadlaka was for the people in the street. But Bizman Hazeh, the main Hadlaka, is no longer for the people in the street, but certainly in Ashkenazi, not Eretz Yisrael, Goluses, from the time that we were in Europe till today in America, the Iker Hadlaka, the poskim will assume, is not for the people in the street, but rather for the B'nai Habayis. What is this based on? The Gemara said that if there's a time of Sakana, then you don't light outside your front door, which was the original mode, rather you light in your house. So, throughout the past hundreds of years, even thousands and a half years, we had enough Sakanas in our Ashkenazi history that we have just shifted, basically, the mitzvah from outside the front door to the inside of our house. And now the main hadlak, without getting into details, the main mitzvah is man hazeh for Ashkenazim, is lighting inside the house for the members of the household. Once that's so, we no longer care about Ad Shetechol Regem HaShok, we care about the people in the house. So that means as follows. If I'm the only one at home, then who am I lighting for? I have to light for the people outside. And therefore I care about when is Techol Regem HaShok. How late are people walking the streets? If, however, there are people at home, roommates, family members, siblings, then I don't care what's happening on the street. As long as there are family members awake in my household, I could go ahead and light. So therefore, let's say I live in a small street in Muncie or in a suburb area where Techol Regem HaShok is at 9 or 9:30. I get home from my... It's not tax season, but for whatever reason, I get home from work at 10 o'clock, 10:30, and my family is awake. I'm definitely allowed to light with a bracha because my family is around. Let's say my family is sleeping. So here I saw something, I heard something very interesting today. The Mishnah Berurah tells us that if people are sleeping, you could wake them up and then invite them to come watch you, and if they watch you, so it's you doing Pirsum Anisa for the family members who have now been woken up, so you can make a bracha. So again, let's just clarify. If you come in very late, and there's no one on the streets anymore, because it's not Washington Heights, because it's a small street somewhere in some suburb, so there's no one in the street to rely on, it's just the people in your house. Who are the people in your house? They're all sleeping, so there's no Pirsum Anisa to anybody, so you cannot make a bracha. What can you do? You could get people to be there. How? By waking them up. Now, of course, I don't think you have the heter to wake up your roommate because you want to do a mitzvah. That might be, maybe a mitzvah ba avera of sorts. Certainly not your parents, where it's even more chamer. Certainly not your older sister or brother, probably. Younger brother or sister, I still don't know if you should. If it's, little kids might think it's very exciting to be woken up at midnight or 2 in the morning for no apparent reason, so that might be exciting for them, so maybe you don't either, it's just because we assume they'd be excited. So the Mishnah Berurah suggests, at least, if he doesn't say this, I'm adding this, you should get permission, but if you do get permission, then the Mishnah Berurah says, he doesn't say get permission, he just says, it is appropriate to awake them so that you can make a bracha if you like. Now, I spoke to a chef about this afternoon, and he said something fascinating that I had never heard. For whatever reason, Rav Shechter felt that would only be true, just like Techol Regem HaShok is when most of the people are still on the street, so Rav Shechter felt would be only if most of the people in the house are awake. Not just if there's one person who's awake, but if most of the people in the house are awake. So let's say there are five people in the house. Let's say there are five apartment mates. Four are sleeping, and it's you. So what would a majority of five be? Three people. So I assume that means you have to wake up two people, because it's you and two people. Not positive about the numbers, but this is what I would assume. You'd have to wake not just one apartment mate, but two apartment mates. So there'd be three people present, because that would be the majority of the, whoever the population of this region is, which is your apartment. If there are seven people in a family unit or in a house, then you'd have to wake up a total of four people. Let's say, I'm sorry, you just have to have a total of four people. That means wake up three more besides yourself, so you have the majority. I never heard this. So I assume it's of Shechtus Chiddush that you need the majority of people. I always assumed you need one other person. Obviously, if it's just you and one roommate, or a person and their spouse, so by waking up that other person, then you have the whole population. It's you and whoever is your roommate, or your apartment mate, or your spouse, and then you're good to go. Yes? So if your roommates are awake but in their own rooms, invite them to come to watch you light in wherever you're lighting, in your bedroom or in the living room, and they'll watch you light and they'll go back to wherever they are. They don't have to stay for half an hour.
And then also, what if your roommate is alone or whatever it is, and your windows overlook an alleyway and not the street? Does that matter?
If your window overlooks an alleyway... So that's a great question. Very many of us have apartments in the backside of buildings where our buildings overlook just the back building or the alley between buildings. So this we'll talk about hopefully in a few minutes. But in case I don't get to it, the answer would be that if there are people in the alleyway, a few people, you don't need so many, three people, that would be sufficient. Or if there are people in opposite apartments, then that would also be sufficient, even if the alleyway itself is not so crowded. So for me, for example, I light in this back kitchen window, which is not on a street. It's really just to an alleyway, exactly as you described. But I have the people opposite me in the building. So if anyone below you that could look up and see it, or they're not going to see it, or it's too far? And there's no one opposite you. So if there are a few people... Okay, so we'll talk about the specific scenario afterwards so I can get the picture. Yeah. Excellent question. Do the people who see the menorah, in order to constitute Pirsum Anisa, when we talk about people seeing it, who are these people? So I saw recently, without having a chance to read it carefully, that it's a machlokes ha'achronim, whether they specifically have to be Jewish people... or they could even be non-Jewish people. But I assume that if you light on a street, even if there are only goyim around, I think it's probably still fair to make a bracha. I think. That's the right, but I'm not sure. But I think it's ultimately the answer is machlok zachron. What floor do you live on?
The third floor.
So I would suggest that if you live on the third floor, you should light at the window or at a table near the window. You can rearrange the furniture for Hanukkah so that your Hanukkah menorah will be at a table right inside the window. What I also could suggest is if you have a ladder, you get a ladder, if whatever, there's different configurations of air conditioners and whatever else, you could always elevate your menorah onto one of the steps of the ladder. But if you do live within 20 amos of the ground level, I would urge you to light in the window if you can.
Okay.
It is more lechatchila. Yes.
Does the age matter?
Excellent question. Yes, I discussed that question with Rabbi Schechter. When you're waking people up, how do we care about the people's ages or not? So, for example, in my family, I have a baby who's just turned a year old. I have Gila who just turned 3. I don't think Gila really understands what Hanukkah is all about. Like, she knows that we light candles, and she knows something about Greeks, but I don't think she understands. You know, she says the word menorah and beis hamikdash, but I don't think she understands what that means. Natanael is 4, and he definitely understands completely what the ideas are, and you could teach him. So I just, for my own kids, I'd assume that the majority of the people, from the people who could understand the situation, which in my, based on my experience, would be 4 years old and up. Could be that you have a little sister who's exceedingly precocious, and at 3 years old she gets the whole deal. I guess my daughter isn't. But Baruch Hashem, she's very precocious, and she doesn't, but my four-year-old does. That's what I assume would be best for my own, you know, hands-on, experimental, you know, experiential experiences, I would assume, from 4 years old and up. Basically, there's no halacha called 4 years old. It's called, Rosh Hashanah said, from the time that they understand what's happening, what lighting candles are, what the point of lighting candles are. So in my family, I'd have to do the majority of the people age 4 and up. According to Rosh Hashanah's, I think, chiddush. Yes. Correct. Once it's still people walking on the streets, like in Washington Heights till 12 or 1 a.m., there's no need to wake anybody up. The question is, if you have a flight that, you know, you just landed and it's 4 in the morning, there's no one on the street, it's deserted, then you have to rely on people in your house, and then you would wake somebody up if you would have their permission. Okay? We'll talk about that. Okay. If you have a... What about the, if you have a window at a fire escape, so the people below from the street can't see your window because of the fire escape that blocks, obstructs the angle of vision, but are the people opposite you in the building opposite you able to see? That would work. If the people opposite you in the opposing apartment buildings are able to see vertically, either the floor above you, the floor below you, the floor opposite you are able to see, that would be sufficient to be considered that it's opposite without... If there is a tree that obstructs people from seeing opposite you, so who's going to see it? The people from the street? Well, if the people from the street can't see it, the people opposite you can't see it, so there's no point in lighting from the window if nobody could see it. So then you'd be lighting for, you'd still be able to light for your family. But that would require that somebody from your family be awake, meaning family meaning the people in the house be awake. If it would be after they're asleep, then you would not be able to make a bracha. If people can't see in your windows, then there's no point of lighting it in the window. Okay. Before we actually get to lighting candles, this is something we talked about last year, and it always comes up, and it's very nogea to all of us, because let's say most of us work or are in school, and we don't get home till, what time do we get home? 6 o'clock. I wish I was an actuary. I'm in Kola, and I live down the block from my house, and I don't get home at 6 o'clock. So let's say you get home at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, I yell at 11 o'clock, whatever. Okay, so let's say you get home late. So the halacha is that you're not allowed to eat before you do a mitzvah. Says the Shulchan Aruch talks about this before the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz, before the mitzvah of Neres Chanukah, before the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah on Purim. Which is why, did you ever realize that on Purim you just fasted a whole day? The Daven Maariv, Tanis Esther is over, and what do? You sit down for 45 minutes or an hour to hear the Megillah before you eat supper. Isn't that foolish? Shouldn't we have a break after Maariv? In shul, at home, have a half-hour break for eating dinner, then come back for Kriyas HaMegillah. The answer is no, unless you're sick. The answer is no, because you're not allowed to eat before you get do your mitzvah especially at night, because we're worried you'll get involved in the meal, forget to do the mitzvah. You'll fall asleep and forget to do the mitzvah. So you're not allowed to eat. So that means this time of the year, if let's say candle lighting is around 4:30, maybe 5 o'clock, 4:50, let's assume the first half hour before that you're not going to eat, so it's going to be at from 4 o'clock. I'm not going to eat from 4 o'clock. I don't get home till 9 o'clock. I'm going to be a wreck, especially if you don't have time to eat lunch today because the client or whatever, or your patients or whoever, or you just forgot to bring lunch today, so you're not going to eat from 4 o'clock till, well, that seems to be the halacha, doesn't it? First of all, This halacha that a person is not permitted to eat before hadlakas neros is only halacha about a meal. But a snack, a person is permitted to eat. When I say the word snack, I'm not talking about the halachas of snacking as in Hilchos Sukkah. Within Hilchos Sukkah, you know, if you have a piece of cake, that's the size of a kibitza, the size of an egg, you have to eat that, at least men have to eat that in a sukkah. Men are not allowed to eat that outside of a sukkah. That's not true here. Here, as long as you're not having a meal, you're allowed to eat it before candle lighting. So let's say you're at work and you're hungry. You could take out an apple. You could take out, I think, even a granola bar. You could take out a yogurt and eat it. You cannot go to dinner on your way home. You cannot come home and have dinner and then light Chanukah candles. The question comes up, let's now talk about a meal. Let's say, I know accounting firms do this, I assume law firms do this as well. Certain accounting firms have a policy that if you stay after 7:30 or 8 o'clock, you could order dinner on the firm's account. And it's very cheap for them. If they're billing you for $250 an hour and they paid $12 for your, you know, your deli sandwich from Mr. Broadway, it's a win-win for them. So anyway, you're going to be at work till, let's say, 9 o'clock because you have to finish this thing. Or let's say you're on the train. Anyway, you can't, you know, light candles while you're on the train for the next 45 minutes from whatever street you're on in Midtown till you get home. So could you have, again, snacks you are allowed, but could you have a meal if anyway you're stuck at work till time X? It's not a matter of if I might forget, I might remember. Anyway, I can't leave till, let's say you have a shift that ends at 11 o'clock or at midnight. And you're going to come home, you're a nurse, so you're going to come home at midnight or 12:30, and you'll light when you get home. So why can't you eat supper at 7 o'clock? Anyway, you're not leaving till, it's not like, oh, I will, you know, if I don't eat supper, then I could go light. Anyway, you're not going to be able to light now. Anyway, you have another 45 minutes of train ride till you could light, even if you want. Are you allowed in that case to eat a meal if anyway you're not going to be able to light now, even if you wanted to? So here, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky had a kula and said basically exactly the logic that we're saying. If anyway, you can't even light if you wanted to, so what's the point? The whole point is don't light, don't get involved in eating because you might not light. I can't light. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky permitted eating in such a circumstance if you're not able to light now. That probably is a chiddush. We have to assume that that's probably a chiddush. The pashtus is presumably a general across-the-board takana that whenever it's before a meal, I'm sorry, whenever there's before a mitzvah, a person is not supposed to have a meal. And therefore, we have to assume that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's logic makes a lot of sense, but he didn't think that was the classic perspective. And again, bottom line, sounds like a person shouldn't eat a meal, regardless of the circumstances, before they lit candles. Now, let's go through a number of scenarios that you might find yourselves in and figure out when to light. Before we talk about scenarios, let's introduce one point that's especially significant on Friday afternoon. A few years ago, when I was involved in Shabbos programming at Yeshiva, a very well-meaning individual came over to me. I'd said that he noticed something frightening. In YU, they have the dormitories, and in the dormitories, they have a set location where all the people light for that dormitory. They don't light in the rooms. There's a story that it tells Yeshiva back a number of decades. They used to light in the rooms, and there was once a fire in the Tel Yeshiva dormitory, and Rachman Litzlan, at least one, if not a number of boys were killed. So it's reasonable. Again, halachically, it's better to light in your rooms, but for obvious fire and sakana, certainly sakana is more important than everything else. Some yeshivas have designated areas to light. YU has the designated dorm places where everybody lights. So one of the very well-meaning yeshiva boys noticed that there are some people in our yeshiva who are very well-intentioned and very well-meaning, but don't really know every bit of halacha from different backgrounds, different... He saw a guy come 5 minutes after Shkia, running down. It was Friday afternoon, Shav Chanukah. He didn't light his Chanukah candle, so he ran downstairs to come light the menorahs. It was ready 5 minutes after Shkia. It was ready after Shabbos had already begun. So he came over to me and said, maybe I should sort of post a guard. Shabbos! You know, Shabbos guard right near these tables to make sure that, again, who's doing this? Only someone who's well-intentioned and really wants to fulfill the mitzvah of Hanukkah. They just don't realize that, oops, it's Shabbos and you can't do that. So, just something to keep in mind. Of course, you're not allowed to light Shabbos candles. You're not allowed to light candles after Shkia, Chas v'Shalom. So therefore, because of that, clearly, Chachamim, who instituted the Zman of Hanukkah candles, which is from Shkia and later, clearly must have assumed that on Friday afternoon, that's not when you're going to light. So clearly it must be that they made an exception for Friday afternoons that you're allowed to light from when? From Plag HaMincha. Plag HaMincha, without getting into details, this year is 3:30. This year it ends up being an hour before Shkia. In an equal day of 6 a.m. Netzach HaMa to 6 p.m. Shkia, in a perfectly equal day when the day is divided into 12 hours of light and 12 hours of dark, a Plag HaMincha will be 1.25 hours before Shkia. This time of the year, when the daylight is less than 12 hours, it's only like a 10 hours of daylight day, so everything gets compressed a little bit, and it ends up that Plag HaMincha, which is 1.25 hours, gets compressed into 1 hour. So Plag HaMincha this week is going to be at 3:31. By the end of Hanukkah, it will be 3:36, 3:37. That would be the earliest possible time that a person could light Hanukkah candles. So let's say, this is going to be very tricky, let's say you want to take it, let's say you're a risky kind of person, and you're going to Teaneck for Shabbos, or to Englewood, or to Fort Lee, nowhere past there definitely, and you're going to leave to your house 45 or 55 minutes before Shkia. So then one could argue, maybe you could light out your Hanukkah candles here, and then spend half an hour in traffic, and whenever you get to your friend's house, let's say you're going to your friend's house, and you'll already have binyotza, your Hanukkah candles, at your own house. I think for Erev Shabbos traveling, that's probably not so smart. So take care of your Hanukkah candles wherever you wherever you'll be for Shabbos. But for us, we'll be home for Shabbos. We're allowed to light only from 3:31, from Plag HaMincha onwards. What do I learn from Friday afternoon? I learned that B'Shas HaDchak, when there's no other choice, I'm allowed to light my Hanukkah candles from before Shkia, from, let's say, this week, 3:31, from Plag HaMincha, even though it is not yet Zman, but it's sort of almost the evening, and that's already in certain areas of Halacha, could be considered the beginning of Laila, which allows candle lighting. So let me give you a few scenarios that might come up. Okay. You're leaving to a wedding, or you're leaving for a date at 4 p.m. You have a choice. You could light after Plag HaMincha, after 3:30, before 4. You could light at 3:45, at 3:55. Or you could light when you get home tonight at 11:30 at night. Let's start one step with an easier question. You could either light at 3:55 or at 8:30. So on one hand, 3:55, maybe it's more lechatchila because your candles will be lit during the time that we mentioned the Rambam who holds that the main lighting is the first half hour after Shkia, so if you light at 3:55, it will be lit. Well, you'll get it till Shkia at 4:30, and then it will be lit for another, you know, you'll put plenty of oil or a big fat candle there. It will be lit till, I don't know, 6 o'clock, but you lit it at a very b'diavad time, at Plag HaMincha, before Shkia. So don't do that. Light it at 8:30 when you come home. What happens if you're going to be at a wedding or a date that will get you home at 11 o'clock at night? Or, for those of us in Washington Heights, you get you back at 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning, where you will not be, where it's no longer Tichl Regem and Hashuk, even for people who live in this neighborhood. Then you have a really good question. Should you light at the B'dievet time before Shkia, of course after Plag HaMincha, at 3:45, or should you be lighting for your roommates at 3 in the morning? The answer is, the halacha is that you should light for your family, for your roommates at 3 in the morning after Tichl Regem and Hashuk, rather than light before Shkia. What happens? A different scenario. I think somebody here asked me a question similar to this. Let's say you're leaving your house again at 4 p.m. and you're going to visit so-and-so for the night. You're going to your aunt's house to sleep over for a day or two, or this week you have some vacation, so you're going to wherever you're going for your day or two or three of vacation this week, and you're leaving your house at 4 o'clock. So I would urge you, if you could just leave your house at 4:30, 4:32, whatever time Shkia is, 4:29. So wait till 4:29, the second Shkia, light your candles, and then go. If you can, based on safety concerns, figure out the safety precautions that you need to take. But let's say that's not an option, you have to leave at 4 o'clock. So you have two options. You could either light at after Plag HaMikveh at 3:45, or you'll have to light at the host's house. Now, lighting at host's house is a whole sugya, which I do not want to talk about tonight, because it's a whole shiur unto itself. But the halacha would say that it is better to light at your host's house, even though it's not your house, you're just a guest there. That would be better than lighting if it's before Shkia. I mean, if it's only after Plag, 3:45, in your own home. Al regel achas, just very, very super quickly, how do you light at your host's house? So, there are two opinions of how to light at a host's house. One is that you just light your own Hanukkah candles. The other opinion is that you are mishtatef bepruta, you join by acquiring some of their oil, and that way you acquire the, you join in their lighting, and you could either give them a nickel. It's always funny when you give, like, you know, your aunt or your uncle a nickel for joining, or somebody else who almost laughs at you for giving them a pruta. You want to give them a $10 bill? You can. But you don't need to, just a pruta. Or, if you don't want to buy anything with money, you could just ask them if you could acquire some of their oil by lifting up their menorah or their candle box and acquiring your share of the candles. And you could have in mind to be yotzei with their lighting, because you have a chelik in their lighting. But we're not going to get into those details of being a guest. Let's say another permutation. Let's say I had a similar shaila like this last year, a very complicated case of a fellow who was going on a flight on a Hanukkah evening. So, is it better to light after Plag or light on the plane? You can't light on the plane. Don't light on the plane. There are laws against this. Even if there are no laws against this, it's not a smart thing to do. No lighting on planes. And please don't have anyone quote me that I said you could light fires on a plane for various reasons. But there is a solution for that fellow who's going on a plane. He could have a shaliach come to his house. He could give his key to somebody. And that person could light in his house on his behalf. You could do shalichus with anything and everything. Shalichus works. Oh, not everything. I can't hire a shaliach to put on tefillin for me. I can hire a shaliach, like the Gemara talks about, and this is done. Let's say there's a bitter divorce. There's a bitter divorce, and the husband doesn't want to see the wife, and the wife doesn't want to see the husband, or one does, one doesn't. So Beis Dins use the concept of shlichas. The husband will appoint a shliach to give the get, and the wife, if she doesn't want to even see his shliach, could appoint a shliach to receive the get, and you could have the shliach of the husband handing the get to the shliach of the wife. The husband's in Tokyo, the wife is in Montreal or anywhere else in the world, and when is the get valid? The moment that it is handed from the one shliach's hand to the other shliach's hand. Shlichas works everywhere. Shlichas certainly works here, where they're lighting in your house for you. So here we have a great question. Is it better to light, again, you have a 6 p.m. flight. So what time are you going to leave? You have a 6:30 flight. Okay? So you're going to leave at 3:45. 7:30? Fine. Whatever you want. So 3:45. You could light yourself at 3:45. That's after Plag. Or you could just get a roommate, a friend, give them the key, and they could light in your house as a shliach at the right time. So what would be better? To be better to light before Shkia, after Plag, 3:45, 3:55, or have a shliach light on your behalf in your house while you're on the plane or while you're in the airport. So here, once again, Rav Shmuel Vazner from Bnei Brak, the Shevet Halevi, says that it's better, you should not light before Shkia if you could avoid it. It's better to have a shliach, light bizman, on your behalf, in your house, than you lighting before Shkia. Yes. You can make the bracha. So the shliach will make a bracha for you. A shliach, I think, can make a bracha for a person. Let me think, are there any examples that I know of a shliach making a bracha for somebody else? That's not shlichas. Kiddush is not shlichas. We did have a funny situation this past Shabbos, actually. We had a guest who doesn't really know how to make his own kiddush, and he walked in the second I finished kiddush. I said, kiddush. I passed the cup around. Everybody drank their grape juice. As we're getting up to wash and tiyas adayim, he rolls in. And first I quickly, got one of my kids' kippahs and slipped it to him without anyone noticing. And then he has to hear kiddush. So what am I supposed to do? Could I say kiddush again? Is it a brach levatala? Bori priya gav is a brach levatala. I think it was lunch. If it's at night, Friday night, then it's not just Bori Priya Gavra, it's also Mekadesh HaShabbos, two brachas. The halacha is, and this is clearly the halacha without any dispute, that I am permitted to say the bracha once again to be motzi this person, even though I just made the bracha a second ago, because there's a concept called Kol Yisrael Yavim Zelazeh. It is not a halashkafic concept, it is based on the halachic concept. The way the Ran beautifully explains this concept is that no Jew has finished completely their own Kiyum HaMitzvah until every last Jew in the world has fulfilled that very mitzvah. And therefore, I did not fulfill my mitzvah of Kiddush so long as this guest of ours did not fulfill his mitzvah of Kiddush, and therefore I'm allowed to say the bracha for him, which is exactly what I did. I said, Bori Priya Gafen, if it would have been Friday night, I would have said Mekadesh HaShabbos, and then we watched Hamotzi. I want to talk about one more scenario. Another case of a traveling during Hanukkah, which again this week, because this, the calendar could happen to some of you. Let's say, again, like we just talked about, you're in transit. And we mentioned that if you're in transit, either in a cab or in an airport or in an airplane, none of which are situations where you could light candles, you could be yotzi with a shliach lighting in your house on your behalf. But let's say you're in a different time zone. Without getting into details, because I'm just going to confuse you with the math, let's say it's not night yet. Like, it's still afternoon of the third day, could he light the fourth night of Hanukkah candles? Or better yet, let's say it's the first night of Hanukkah, and it's not Hanukkah at all for you, and he or she, your shliach, is going to light the Hanukkah candles, where it's not for, on your behalf, but it's not even Hanukkah for you. Or on the eighth day, depending on which direction east or west you're going. Let's say it's the eighth day of Hanukkah, and you, for you, wherever you're located without getting into details, it's not Hanukkah anymore. It's the ninth day of Hanukkah. There's no ninth day of Hanukkah. It's not Hanukkah anymore, but they're lighting the Hanukkah candles on your behalf as a shliach. Is that going to be okay? In those situations, Rav Shlomo Zalman says that it is okay, because inasmuch as the mitzvah of Hanukkah is not a mitzvah on the individual, it's a mitzvah of the house. The mitzvah on the house. Therefore, your house was mekayim the mitzvah through the shliach at the time when it is Hanukkah, where that house is, and that would be permitted despite the fact that you yourself are not located in that area. Question. That does not only apply to family members, that applies to any shliach who's doing it on your behalf. Last year, those of you who were here, I want to add on to something that I said last year. Let's talk about Motzi Shabbos. Now, Shabbos ends when it says on the calendar 42 minutes or 45 minutes after Shkia. Moshe says, ideally, you should wait 50 minutes after Shkia. Some of you are familiar with Rabbeinu Tam's opinion. I don't know why we call Rabbeinu Tam's opinion. The Shulchan Aruch passes this way. 72 minutes after Shkia. Or maybe some other numbers. I'm not getting into the details of what exactly the numbers are. But we typically call Rabbeinu Tam's Shkia, Rabbeinu Tam's Motzei Shabbos, which is 72 minutes after Shkia. Let's say a person is Machmir to wait 72 minutes after Shkia for them to make Havdalah, to do Malacha. What do they do this year, this week? On one hand, you have a chumra to wait, it's still Shabbos. On the other hand, if you don't light bisman, we said, remember we mentioned the Rambam, that if you don't light bisman, forget about it. You didn't even fulfill the mitzvah at all, period. So, are you going to do your chumra for Motzei Shabbos, or are you going to try to get it closer to the Zman to fulfill the mitzvah of Chanukah? So here, last year I mentioned that Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote that Rabbeinu Tam is a chumra, and a chumra should never, right? This is always a dangerous thing when you have people who accept chumras upon themselves. With every chumra, there's always some kula involved, either to you or to your parents, or to whoever else you're dealing with. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says it's not right that a chumra for Rabbeinu Tam should knock off the potential possibility of not being yosei the ikar hadin of fulfillment of the kiyum b'mekayim, the mitzvah of Chanukah, appropriately. That's what I said last year. I have to clarify that this year somebody pointed out to me that that's not what Rav Moshe Feinstein holds. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that when it comes to Chanukah, whatever time, whatever chumra a person normally holds on Motzei Shabbos, if they normally hold 72 minutes after Shkia, then wait 72 minutes after Shkia and don't light Chanukah candles until whenever you normally are machmir to hold your Motzei Shabbos. Let's say one fascinating thing which applies to a lot of different areas. What about the following? Let's say we follow Rav Shlomo Zalman, who says that I'm not going to put a chumra in front of a halacha, you know, a fulfillment of a mitzvah, and therefore I'm going to light, I always keep 72 minutes, but this week, this Motzei Shabbos, I'm going to light when Shabbos is over, 15 minutes after Shkia. Wait a second. If I had a chumra that I've been makpid on for the past 51 weeks, or 5 years for that matter, so do I have to do Hataras Nedarim? What about in general? Do you ever find yourself in situations where you did something, a minog tov, a number of times, and so it's like a neder, and then all of a sudden you find yourself in a situation where, blank, where you can't, whatever the situation is, without getting into my machronim, or chol v'yisrael, or who knows, whatever other chumras you might have picked up at various points in your life, and you find yourself in some tight spot where you just can't fulfill that minog tov, so do you have to do hatar sandarim? So Shechter pointed out to me, one of the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch, the Dagul Mirvava, we'll finish with this, maybe one more point. He says that when it comes to a neder, that's not a real neder, but it's only a minhag tov that you did three times, by definition, if you only took it upon yourself as a minhag tov, by definition you realize that there will be times that you're going to be in sticky situations and you're not going to be able to do that minhag tov. And therefore, Hataras Nedarim is not needed for exceptional situations that you're not able to do the minhag tov. In other words, when do you need Hataras Nedarim? For a minhag tov that you accepted upon yourself? When you want to discontinue the minhag tov that you accepted upon yourself. You accepted upon yourself whatever chumra, which is wonderful, as long as it's balanced and not hurting other people or hurting yourself. And now you want to discontinue it. Okay, it's a minhag tov that you did three times. You have to do Hataras Nedarim if you want to discontinue it. But if you would like to continue it, for example, here, keeping 72 minutes, it's just right now, this specific scenario, it's at odds with my Kiyum HaMitzvah of Chanukah, then, says the Dagul Mirvava on the commentary on the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Nedarim, then I do not need a Hataras Nedarim, and I could just ignore my Chumrah this week, because it's an extenuating circumstance. There's no Din HaNeder, because it's an extenuating circumstance. And I'll light Bizman, 15 minutes after Shkia, when regular Shabbos is over, as Rosh Hashanah would hold. And next week I'll continue with my chumra of keeping 72 minutes after Shkia. Just to finish off, and then I'll take questions afterwards, when people have apartments, keep in mind that if you're on the first few floors of your apartment building, you can light in your windows for the people in the Rishus HaRabim. You have 20 amos, so if you're on the first floor, the second floor, the third floor, you're within the first 20 amos of ground level. If you're on the fourth floor, it's machlokas, so you should still light in the window. Once you're on the fifth or sixth floor, then you're too high above ground level to be lighting for the people in the Rishus HaRabim, to be lighting to do Pirsum and Issa for the people on the street. And in such a case, you would only be able to light at the window, you know, if there are no other people in the house, for example, if there are buildings opposite you. If there are no buildings opposite you, and you're on the fifth or sixth floor, then you have to light for your own family. And the poskim write that instead of lighting for your own family in the window, it would be better to light inside your doorway within a tefach of the door.
Okay, 59 minutes and...